Yeah, fear and relief are still feelings I live with. I have to say they haven't left.
Yeah.
I still live with them, you know, fear of can we continue? Will this thing sustain?
Yeah.
But then the relief of the joy of doing the work that I think is valuable.
Worried anxious group of people trying to move along the line. Maybe one day we'll get up to something. Until then, we say,
Salam and hello, everyone, and welcome to our 99th episode. My name is Lily Bakala Piper.
Whoa. Hey. Lily, stop the press. Today, the spotlight is on you.
Hiya.
So, salam and hello, everybody. My name is Njoki Munene, and today we are going to shake things up. As a researcher here at Salam and Hello, I have had the extraordinary pleasure of deep diving into the incredible journey of our very own Lily Bakala Piper. So strap in, because today we are peeling back the curtains and giving you a look at the woman behind the mic.
That's so I'm blushing. It's hot in this studio.
With over 25 years of experience in international development, education, and strategic communication, she's made impactful contributions at prestigious institutions such as Harvard University and the United Nations and even the World Bank. She's played a pivotal role in the creation of Disney and National Geographic's hit show, Tim Sayari, an authentic African children's program that aims to encourage viewers to engage in conversation of Africa's vast biodiversity and natural resources, which has captivated audiences in more than 50 countries across Africa and beyond. So let's fast forward to 2018, when Lily said adios 9 to 5 and plunged headfirst into the crazy world of media entrepreneurship with her brainchild Uproot, which is now and has now, sorry, blossomed into the vibrant Salam and Hello. You have created over 15 live shows, produced more than 90 episodes. Yes. That's amazing. Crazy. That bring joy and justice to audiences far and wide. But she did not stop there. She's incredible, this woman. She's so incredible. Oh no, she is a TV host, speaker extraordinaire, and she is currently the host of Mastercard Foundation's EdTech Kenya TV show, where she delves into the intersection, of education and technology. She's a proud recipient of numerous awards, including the 2022 USAID Meritorious Honor Award. I've been practicing that for a while. The 2023 USAID Private Sector Engagement Excellence Award. Mm. That's a mouthful. And has 6 USAID commendations for her various contributions. And let's not forget her most recent accolade, Creator of the Year under the category of podcasting in the inaugural Digital Creators Awards. Our award. Behind the camera, clap, guys.
Our award.
Amazing. Oh, and on an even more personal note, she is a loving wife to Benjamin Piper and a superhero mommy to 4 mini moguls in training.
Oh, I like that.
So grab your front seats, everybody, as we welcome Lily to the hot seat.
Oh, seriously. Hot flashes, hot seats, hot potato.
So N, Kwana, Dena, Meta.
Metachu.
Oh, I tried. Welcome, Lily.
That is so beautiful. I'm like smiling and crying and upside down and inside out.
Oh my gosh. You're so sweet. We're both shy. We've been wanting this to happen for a while, right?
Yeah, it's really, really special. Thank you.
You're welcome. And you know, as I sit down here and I think that this is the 99th episode, not only am I honored to be in this number, but I'm just honored to have been part of this journey for a year now. Yeah. So it's our 1 year anniversary.
It's our anniversary.
And so I guess we've had a lot of new followers who've come, who've joined us since then, and we've grown significantly since then. So I guess the first place I wanted to start off is from your journey from Uproot to Salam. What inspired the rebranding? Hmm. What made you decide, I've been Aprit for a while, now I want to be Salam? How did that come to?
Well, first, thank you for that really, really warm introduction. And thank you for being a part of what the show has been able to accomplish. Could not have ever done it alone. And so everybody in the studio, actually, who's here, Ernest, Rick, Tamia, Rahma, Becky, who's not here today, but I mean, all of you have been a big part of this thing, flying, my family, friends. So big thanks to everyone. Uproot started because I always loved media. I definitely thought I would go straight into media out of university, but life had its own plans. God has his own plans. And so I had massive detours into education and development. And then in 2018, I was like, you know, I have to do this thing. I had been storytelling in different ways up to that point. Every now and then someone would ask me to speak at an event or something, or at a school. I spoke at my church somewhat regularly. And I just thought, you know, I have a lot to say. So maybe there's conversations that I could be having. And so the name Uproot was really reflective of my experience at that time. So in 2018, we had left the U.S. I think it's 2007. So we've been out of the U.S. at that point 11 years, and we didn't plan that. Yeah. I'm an Ethiopian immigrant to the United States. So I got there when I was a kid, grew up there. I thought, you know, this is going to be home. I married a Black American man. So I thought, you know, we'd stick around, but have connections back home.
Yeah.
We came back to Ethiopia for the first time together in 99, and then eventually started coming back more. And then we ended up moving. But I still thought we would go back. But the name Uproot really was reflective of that experience of being uprooted from a home, making home somewhere else, uprooting again. Now we're raising kids who are between homes and between identities. And so the first couple of stories I did really are around that, around themes of people who had to leave, people who are multilingual, people who were experiencing life in different ways. Maybe they had a partner who was from a different culture. So a lot of stories around culture and identity. That still seeps in, but during the pandemic, I took a break because I took a new job and it was really demanding and I really was having trouble balancing the both. So I had to put the podcast on pause, came back to it 2022, I think. I was not satisfied that I'd really done my best with that show, or that I had done 37 episodes, but I really wanted to do more. So when I rebranded, I just thought, I don't want to just talk about identity and culture. I was feeling at that point like I've been in Africa now almost 17 years and just been back, I should say. So Salam is how we say hello in Ethiopia. It means peace. And Salam is internationally, I think, known in most of our circles as the word for peace. So I thought, you know, I almost thought about calling it Salam and Habari, actually, because in Kenya you say, how are you with Habari? But then I thought, this is doing too much. It's just doing too much. Salam and Habari was just too much. So I thought, let me just keep it Salam and hello. And, you know, I asked a couple friends and overwhelmingly people were like, no, keep Uproot. But I liked Salam and hello. So I thought, I'm going to go with it.
I love that. Love that. That is so nice. And I love how you touched on, at the beginning, you touched on how you had a passion for media. Mm-hmm. And now that brings me to my next question, because I want to talk about that pause, because you've always had a passion for media. I research her a lot. So
you do.
She's
the reason we have good questions, by the way.
So Lily had a passion for media even before you got the kids. I mean, there was a lot that was going for you even back then. And you kind of sort of had to put that on hiatus. But you've been able to keep that passion alive regardless of where you've been. So I think the next question I have for you is, how did you feel when you finally decided to put everything aside and just follow your passion after such a long time?
A lot of feelings. I mean, fear and relief probably were at the surface. Fear because there's always the high risk of failure, and it's very public when you're doing media. It's not like, you know, I started a baking company and, you know, maybe I sell a few cupcakes, maybe I don't, but it's not necessarily on the public stage, but media feels very public. You know, your face is there, your voice is there, your ideas. On the same time, I felt relief because I was like, I was making everyone miserable around me, I feel like, because I was not doing what I really think I've been called to do, which is to have conversations and make connections. And so the relief of like, okay, at least now, even no matter what happens, I can say I tried. I can say I actually did it. It didn't just live in my journals. It didn't just live in my spreadsheet. But I actually did it. I took a risk. And I have to be so grateful. I am often grateful that I'm in Kenya and in Nairobi. I could have done this in Addis Ababa for sure. I wasn't ready at the time when I was living there because we moved back to Addis Ababa in 2007. I had a couple of years there. My kids were super young. But when I came to Nairobi, what I found was really a very creative and vibrant community who were willing to lend a hand. There were so many people ask questions to support you. Podcasting at that time before the pandemic was lesser known. So people kind of knew it, but everyone knew radio.
Yeah.
Even if they didn't know podcasting. So I'd say, you know, I want to do something like radio, but it lives, you know, in a permanent place.
Yeah.
People were really supportive and willing to help. And now it's really grown and there's a vibrant community around it, which is amazing. It was not there at all, even 5 years ago. So groups like AfriPods, Africa Podcast Festival, those were like the kind of titans who helped us all launch into this space and are still around helping us improve. So fear and relief are still feelings I live with. I have to say they haven't left. I still live with them, you know, fear of can we continue? Will this thing sustain? But then the relief of the joy of doing the work that I think is valuable.
Yeah, and you know what they say, all good things come to those who
wait. I guess so. But
patience is also a virtue,
madame. It's really so true. And I don't know that I possess much patience because I started when I was older. I was in my 40s. And so I wanted success now. I wanted things to work now. I applied for every single grant opportunity. There were all these incubators, platforms. In 2020, post the murder of George Floyd, the whole world wanted to talk to Black people. So there was Black lives all of a sudden mattered.
Yeah.
Black podcasters mattered.
Yeah.
So I just was like applying to everything. I got nothing. Not a single thing worked out. Yeah. And I'm telling you, I have folders of things I've applied to, decks that I've made.
Yeah.
So that was really like, okay, I am going to have to be patient, I guess. But entrepreneurship in your later years of, I shouldn't say later years of life, God willing, I have many more, but in your 40s.
Yeah.
It's just hard. It's just hard.
I think that's such a good point that you've raised, and we'll come back to that because there's so many questions I want to ask around that.
This is how people feel, huh?
Yeah.
When they're on the other side of this thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's intense. This is I even said, I'll give you 10 minutes.
Yes, you did.
This thing is,
I'm really Lily today. I hope I'm embodying in this role. But I wanted to touch on something that you mentioned earlier, and I want to know how you've been able to create balance in your life, especially now that you're so fully committed into creating your own journey in the media podcasting world. How did you balance between being a mother of four and wanting to be a media entrepreneur? Like, how was it navigating those emotions, the highs, the lows? I'm sure it mustn't be easy. I mean, well, even now.
It's not easy. It's also not pretty. It's very messy. I don't know that I've achieved any balance. I mean, my kids will tell you, like, I just saw my son in between. This is our third episode of the day today that we've recorded. I just saw him and he's like, how's it going? And I was like, don't ask me now, please. I mean, I'm in like record mode. Yeah. Like, I cannot reflect on how the previous. So they have lived with a creative.
Yeah.
I have two kids at least who are highly creative and the other two are also creative. So it's a creative household. And I think there is some grace for those of us who are in the creative space to kind of be messy people. I'm really, really, really one of the great, great fortunes of my life and undeserved blessings is my partner of 25 years this year who... makes me really feel old because I'm like, when you say 25 years, you've been doing something, people are like... How old are you? Immediately, you have to know how old you are. I got married as a child.
This is a safe space, don't worry.
Thank you, baby. So his steadiness and his like both fidelity to me as well as he's a very different personality. Mm-hmm. He's just easygoing, calm, very supportive, allowed me to kind of be hectic, to be honest with you. But I don't know if I've really figured out the balance piece. There have been many times where I feel like I don't get enough sleep. I don't get enough rest. My nutrition is all over the place. My fitness is up and down.
Yeah.
I feel very strongly about not dropping the ball as a mother, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather not sleep than miss a phone call from my kids or not show up for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the time of the pandemic and relaunching the show, and I was working full time and doing this, and everybody was home, it was challenging at times.
Yeah.
And it still is, but I do believe in that life is a long game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just kind of give yourself grace if you can. In the meantime, try and improve. Like my goal this year was to try and work on my sleep hygiene.
Yeah.
get off the apps, get off the phone. I'm doing a little bit better. You know, but I set yeah. goals and yeah. then I like to look back at them and yeah. that helps me see, okay, I have grown. I have yeah. not just been like a hot mess for yeah. 25 years.
Yeah, yeah,
I've had
yeah.
some moments of growth,
yeah.
but yeah, it's a process. I don't know, Juki. I feel like I'm still very much figuring it out.
And you know, I like that you said that because as a mother myself, sometimes I feel like there's no straight line. There's no boundaries,
no.
right? You still have to work.
Yeah.
You still have to give them your undivided attention. And it's so good to know that we're not alone.
Yeah.
Like women are not alone.
Like not alone.
I can look up to you and ask you, okay, how did you do this? Maybe in a specific timeline
yeah.
and maybe not throughout the 25 years because
yeah.
maybe that could be a lot. But parenting is all about, you know,
yeah.
learning every day. And
it is. It
I'm
is.
So proud of you. Like,
thank you. Oh,
four
that
kids,
means a lot.
Like,
thank
I'm so
you.
Impressed. Like, I look up to
yeah,
her. Oh,
yeah.
my God.
That's
on the
so,
Lord. Don't,
that's so generous.
Don't say it. Don't tell anyone.
Between me and you. Just and you.
And you. Yeah. So out of the 99 episodes that you've done, and such an incredible. Yeah, it's great. Incredible accomplishment. Like,
we
it's
did
crazy.
That. Yeah.
yeah, every week. That's insane. Mm. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Like
that, to all of us. I mean, it
yeah,
takes
the whole
village,
team
truly,
to
yeah.
everyone behind the camera. Guys,
truly.
it truly does take some sleepless nights.
It
a
does.
Lot of sleepless
it
nights,
does.
Nights to get
yeah.
to get
yeah.
to where we are today. But I wanted to ask you about the 99 episodes and just reflect on that for a bit. Which episode do you feel stands out the most to you as your most transformative personally?
Yeah.
That you feel at that specific time you experienced emotions that you had not experienced before in any specific interview?
I love that question.
Yeah.
I love that question. Well, I want to say two things. One, I want to say, in addition to like appreciating the team, I think I have not said this before on our show and I've been always meaning to. One, I want to thank some people too because, you know, like the chairs we're sitting in are from Love Artisan.
Yes.
And we did thank them when they first came into us, but I want to continue just appreciate the people who have come alongside to say we believe in you because
yeah.
that's helped us.
Yeah.
My son Silas wrote our jingle
yeah.
for this show
yeah.
and performed it. And it's a beautiful, I still, every time I hear it, I'm lifted. My daughter Selah wrote the original Uproot jingle.
Oh, nice.
We've just had so much help along the way. And I just want to appreciate this. But my friend Kelly, who owns a small studio in the US called Nabo
yeah.
Studio, she herself is an entrepreneur
yeah.
and she sent money just to say, I believe in you and hang
oh,
in
wow.
there. If I think about the most transformative, there are definitely a few of them that come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
One, when I did with Kevin Mwachiro,
yeah.
Black, Queer and Beloved.
Yeah.
I think that conversation for me, number one, I'd really wanted Kevin on the show because I'd heard him talk publicly, be an advocate. But when he came, first of all, he was such a warm human being
yeah.
and the conversation felt so between friends, even though we had just met, which
yeah.
is really a tribute to the spirit he came in. And he just really shared his heart. And I mean, I really wept on that show. Like I just was boohooing at some point. And he held space for me as well, if that makes
yeah.
sense. Like he allowed me to experience that. Because I think when you're telling something, an experience that's happened to you and someone expresses emotion, you can feel the need to comfort them or manage their emotions. But he just let my emotions live alongside his story. And I thought that was really beautiful. It just allowed me to connect with him also. It was transformative to hear his story, to appreciate him. He's just a little bit older than me, not much at all. So I could just put myself in his story at a lot of times. So it really, that felt very transformative. The conversation I had very recently, actually, with a woman, Muthoni, I'm blanking on her last name. Help me, guys.
Gitao,
thank you. Where she just talked about her choice to be child-free. And she said something in that episode that really stayed with me, which is, you know, when someone has a child, they don't have to consult with everybody. And yet that actually does become a responsibility of society to care for that child, show up at birthday parties, whatever, you know. And she's like, and yet my choice to be child-free has become with such scrutiny and lack of support. And it really made me look at, how was I interacting with women in my life who had a different life than me?
Yeah.
Whether they were unpartnered, whether they were with kids, without kids, whether they were older, younger, just how was I interacting with other women? Because
yeah.
I think that connection was the one that she was making in particular.
Yeah.
So that really has caused me to self-reflect. there have been so many other episodes of people who were completely outside of my lived experience. Mm-hmm. We did an episode on Sudan and talked to three different people in the Sudanese diaspora mm-hmm. about what this moment in Sudan's history has felt like to them.
Yeah.
It's very humbling to hear their stories. There was the episode we did with Eliud Kipchoge, which was super early on. And I just remember thinking, this guy is so regular. He's such a regular dad guy figure. You know what I mean? Like I'm talking to him, he's like rushing on the phone. This was on, it was still an audio show. Yeah. He's busy, he's moving, da, da, da. And I was just like, but he was also just genuine. And yeah. I just thought I loved that he had achieved this position on the global stage and he was just so generous. And in his words around teamwork, and he said, I always say it's not but the team who's won. Yeah. Really show me, because you think about marathoning, it does feel very singular. Like you have to complete those kilometers, you have to train. But he really talked about, no, it's a team. Someone's thinking about my shoes. Somebody's thinking about my nutrition. Someone's thinking about where's my phone, you know, during the race, you know? So it really has really made me think, no matter what I get to, there is nothing I do alone. And I don't want to do it alone either. So I don't know. Those are four episodes, I guess, that have really stayed with me.
That's fine. And you've actually touched on a topic that has made me curious for a very long time. And it's how you're able to navigate conversations that are so, I want to say sensitive, topics that can trigger a lot of people. And I find that you do it with so much ease, but yet you still have the curiosity aspect, but you still want to be sensitive and humane. And I think that is reflected in your work in Kakuma and even in your conversation with us about the sex workers and even addressing the situation that was happening in Gaza. And so I think what I would love to know is how are you able to do it? You know, like, I think it's so commendable for me. Something that I sit always at the back, but always wondering, like, I do the research and some of these topics can be very deep. But I try not to translate that on to the questions because, you know, you never know how the person who's receiving the questions is going to perceive them. Yeah. But how are you able to take such sensitive information and present it in such a caring way that the people in the room feel the conversation, but don't feel like we're being triggered by it? How do you do that?
That's really kind of you to say that. Thank you. I'm guessing a little bit here, but I think I do know about myself that I am an empath. Even today we had an interview with, you know, the Uli and Tata team who are animators, but I was just so moved by their work that it brought me to tears. And it was quite a joyful conversation.
Yeah.
Even what they said was a joyful thing, and yet it really moved me. So there is some strength in empathy and being an empath. I for years, because I do cry easily and I'm very emotive, I always felt it was a weakness, particularly in contrast to some people who I really admire around me who are pretty calm or focused. Like my best friend is very calm and analytical. My husband is very calm and analytical. My father is very calm. So I was always like, this person out here like, woo, everybody, did you feel that? Did you see that? Like both high, low, high, low.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can feel like a weakness, but I have come to appreciate with age that it's really my strength. Yeah. It can be a weakness if I'm not aware of it, if I'm completely out there in the world just being any kind of way, but I'm aware of myself. And so I think I'm realizing that can be a strength. I'm a woman of faith. I pray before every interview for God's help and grace. And sometimes I'm obedient to that grace and sometimes I'm not. But I feel like the times where there's been connection, it's because I've had divine help to stay calm. Because there are times where I relate very closely to the issue, but I don't want to put myself in the story. And that's changed. When I listen to some of my earlier interviews, I talk about myself way more. I probably already talk about myself a lot, but it used to be bad. And so I feel like that's been an area of a bit of growth to be like, okay, you also don't have to be in it. You're not the main character of the story. So just like give space for them. And I hope our guests feel safe. I mean, I have to again credit the team because for many episodes, we recorded in my home. And so, you know, we were really intentional about having tea and coffee, a glass of water, some pumpkin bread.
Yeah.
You know, like just trying to let people, those pumpkin bread days, it's been a minute.
Oh my gosh. They're so good.
And so, you know, we tried, I think, as a team to set people at ease when they came. We've had people come, if you guys remember, to the set in different ways. One person who came, not angry, but there was a wall there. It was early on in our interviews. Mm-hmm. And I think we were all like, oh my goodness, how's this going to go? Because they didn't look like they felt like they're being interviewed. halfway into this, after some pumpkin bread and tea and some conversation, it was okay. Yeah. Somebody else came to set one time and was quite upset by something else that happened in their life. And we just had to like delay the interview by 30, 45 minutes. Do you remember what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Before we could start to give them space. And so I think as a team, we've tried to also create safety by emailing our guests ahead of time, giving them the questions so that they feel safe, that they're not going to feel like we're trying to get them, you know, or that's not our style. Yeah. We're not trying to exploit anyone or, you know, expose something for the first time, you know, for the sake of clicks on social media. So I think we have tried as a team to be intentional about communicating well, creating an atmosphere that's welcoming and safe and warm. And then the rest really is, you know, in God's hands. We hope the interviews go well. They're funny, they're entertaining, they're light. Some are better than others. You know, sometimes we really hit the wall, hit the ball out of the park.
The road running.
Well, the sports analogy is not working. Something is moving far. Other times it's like, could have gone better.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful to our guests who are willing to come and share on those sensitive topics because they are hard to talk about. And I'm really always feel humbled by their willingness.
Yeah, well, it must be your energy also. You must exude a very calming,
trusting... Well, I don't know. Do I?
Yeah, you do. To me, you do.
Thank you.
And you're also so funny. Like,
I just love
you so much. I think you're so cool. But in that regard, I think you've done such a fantastic job at just being able even to navigate those conversations because they can... Sometimes
it can be tricky sometimes. Yeah,
they can be very tricky. And we've watched many interviews where the interviewee has span off, but somehow you're able to like keep it inside, right? And speaking of your guests, you've interviewed people from over 15 countries.
Yeah,
that's such an incredible statistic. And so I just wanted to touch on the guests. So we curate a lot of the conversations, but I want to talk about your interactions with the guests because you're the one who mostly interviews them. Who would you say has profoundly changed your perspective or deeply touched you in any interaction that you've had with any of your guests?
Ooh, I would feel so bad to say just one, but there's a couple. So very early on, I did an episode, this is in the Uproot days, called When Good Intentions Are Not Enough. Mm-hmm. And it was about the industry of child orphanages and children's homes in Kenya, but then also the region. Mm-hmm. And I had two adults who were on who had been raised in children's homes. Neither one of them were actually orphaned, but had been taken to homes under this era in Kenya, Ethiopia, Uganda, where families were taking their kids to homes because they felt like they couldn't provide an education, and somebody, a missionary, some do-gooder, whatever, would come and say, oh, they'll be better off in this children's home down the street.
Yeah.
And so they had been raised in institutional care. So the young woman, her name was Ruth Rashuka, told her story about being asked to perform at holiday visits from the donors. They would come to the children's home and they would be spruced up and you know, given nice clothes, and she would say on those days we would feel really happy because we knew we were going to get food properly. We knew we were going to get cake properly or something. Mm. And then as soon as the visitors left, we also knew we're back to one meal a day or, you know, things that were donated were never given to us. And just hearing someone's experience of living in an institution when she had living relatives, that was the thing that broke me, is that she had living relatives. I can't remember where she was from in Kenya, but someone had told her grandmother that she would be better off in a home. When she later went back to her shags, she didn't know the mother tongue. She couldn't communicate with her family because she'd been raised in Nairobi. Mm. She was disconnected from the cultural practices and you know, just the culture generally. So Ruth's story really stayed with me. We heard from some people after that episode too, because it was a bit controversial. People are like, well, what do you expect us to do? You don't want us to help orphans? You don't want us to give to orphanages? And I feel like our job is to shine a light on these questions and to ask the questions. How you wrestle with it and figure it out is up to you. But Ruth's story really did transform me and stay with me. And then there was another young man in the Uproot days too, who had grown up in Asia, and he was Asian as well. And it was a story about where do you belong? Where's home when you've been raised in a different place in the world? And he made me laugh so hard because he said, you know, I had moved from Vietnam. And he is half Chinese, half Korean. So he said, I'd moved from Vietnam, where a lot of people looked like me. I mean, I was Asian. I looked at them, moved to Kenya.
Yeah.
He's like, I did not know I was short until I moved to Kenya. And he's a noticeably short kid.
Oh my gosh.
And I just remember that laughing so much about that, but also being his self-awareness at that age. I was just like, I'm so impressed by you that you have this self-awareness. You're going to be fine
yeah.
because you really know yourself. So those two guests really stick out. And
yeah.
I don't know, this year we've had some amazing guests. I love talking to Dennis Ombachi. Like, we cooked together.
Yeah.
We made ugali and dips,
yeah.
which I thought was a banging meal.
It was so tasty.
And he'd not made Ethiopian food before. And he just shared his whole story from mental health to going to the Olympics to cooking. I mean, what a story, what a life. And it's just fun. He was just so fun to talk to.
He was.
Yeah,
he really
awesome.
Was. And let's now dive into your live events.
Okay, yes.
Because
we love the live events.
Yeah.
It's stressful. But fun.
Take us through how the live show, first live show you had. How was it? What emotions, what was running through your mind? What emotions did you have that first live show?
See, this is one of my flaws, is that I thought when you start podcasting, you just start with live shows. I didn't know, like, you work up to it. Like, you should slowly work up to that. My very first show ever was a live show. First episode I ever recorded was a live show.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I actually found these posters recently where I was like, and again, podcasts were kind of novel then.
Yeah.
So I remember talking to friends and they were like, yeah, you should do a live one because people would come to that. It's not something people are doing in Nairobi
yeah,
yet.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
can go to clubs. They can go to, you
yeah.
know, whatever, Gecko, but no one's doing podcasts. So my very first show was a live show at Wasp and Sprout.
Oh my gosh.
I think the audience had like 60 people. We
oh,
sold
wow.
tickets. Yeah, we sold tickets. We sold out.
Oh, wow.
We had vendors who sold food. I had merch.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I had nothing. I was nobody. I mean, I came out the gate like, you're going to listen to me.
And you became somebody.
Listen to
like
me.
60 Wait, people were there?
I don't know. I think it was
what?
Just... my friends and then my kids' friends and then my kids' friends' friends and my kids' friends. I mean, it was like, call
friend,
all your cousins.
Tell your friend. Tell a friend of a friend.
Exactly.
And a friend of a friend.
It was a lot. It was a lot of that. It was a lot of that.
Yeah.
And it was a panel. It was like four or five people interview.
Really?
Yeah,
you
girl.
Went, it's go big or
thinking.
Go home.
It really
like,
was.
Go big or go home. Like,
basically. And I guess I didn't go. I guess I went big.
Yeah,
and
you went big. Like, oh my goodness.
So after that, everything else seemed so much simpler.
Simpler, yeah. Because then my next question would be, how has that experience shaped the rest of your live shows?
Yeah.
Because I mean, if it was that incredible, then the next many live shows
yeah.
that you've done, actually, that's the standard that you need to meet every single
time. It was,
time.
And it was challenging because I think the next live show was at, I interviewed the author Sesonke Msimang, who's a South African author. I interviewed her. Do you love her?
I love Sesonke.
I love Sesonke too. She's amazing. She's a great, doing a great thing with The Guardian, I think, advice column now, which is amazing. So we did a live event with her at a school. So it was a friendly audience, which was great. But then the next one was in Kakuma, a refugee camp. And it was two different locations, two different shows. That was really hard because, you know, now we know to do a recce, right? Where you go ahead, you see what you need. You cannot do a recce in Kakuma.
No.
You just communicate as well as you can, try and get all the technical specificities, So we took everything from Nairobi, the mics, the mixing board, everything. Got there, no power. No power.
What a
And
wow.
you're like, what can you say to tell them? You know, we need to have power today. It's just that day didn't have power. The generator was not working. So we just had to be flexible. We had to ask the kids to stay later, had to ask parents to stay later because we did it with kids there. We did it at two secondary schools. Yeah, two different secondary schools. The second one, in fact, we got to it so late because of the power issues at the first one.
Yeah.
It's dry, it's hot, it's complicated. But again, you feel so privileged. As soon as you start talking to people, everything becomes worth it. I think that's what I've learned. It's just, you feel so humbled. I mean, I didn't mention them in the transformative conversations, but I met a young woman there who, in my interpretation, she looks South Sudanese.
Mm-hmm.
So I had, in my consulting work, just done something in South Sudan. I had been in Juba. I had learned a little bit of, I think it's Dinka.
Yeah,
they
Dinka.
Speak, right?
Yep.
So I learned like the greeting in Dinka. So I greeted her. And she's like, and she greeted me back in Amharic. And
oh,
I was
wow.
so surprised. I was like, oh, you speak Amharic. And she said, I'm Ethiopian. And so then I sat down with this young woman who was from Benishungul Gumuz, which is a region in Ethiopia very close to the South Sudanese border.
Ah.
And she's like, the reason I'm in Kakuma is because my family was basically being stoned by the local villagers saying, we're not Ethiopian. We don't look Ethiopian, because she was tall. She was slender. Yeah. Her features were very South Sudanese.
Yeah.
And I've been told my whole life I don't look Ethiopian, but I eat injera. We make shisharo.
She's Ethiopian.
I speak Amharic. Yeah. She's like, that is all I know. But we were forced out of our community. And that's how we ended up in Kakuma. And it was just so humbling to be like this, I don't know, maybe she's 15, 16 at the time, young woman has completely changed my view of my entire identity.
Yeah.
Because she just told me her story.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beautiful and powerful thing about podcasting and storytelling more broadly as a part of our African culture and our heritage, is that stories can be transformative.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so that live event was the most complex, but the most rewarding. I wish I had video. Those were the days where we were doing video. So yeah. I wish I had video of that. I have clips and some still images, but and we have short video, but not a full video. We just have the full audio.
Yeah.
From there, it's been, the Nairobi ones. You've been there, Joki. They're complicated. I mean, weather, guests. We had a live show where our guest who were interviewing didn't show up, which is why I met your lovely partner, Jean.
Yeah.
Hi, Jean.
Bonjour.
And so, you just have to roll with it, because it's live, it's happening now. I mean, I give huge thanks to Rahma and you for the calm that you guys bring in order to sets is not a gift I have. It's not my ministry. Calm is not my ministry. And so I've really relied on everybody to like make those things happen.
Yeah.
And when it happens, it's beautiful. I love the energy of a live crowd.
Yeah.
If I could do every episode live, I would.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I love it.
I think I've used the word incredible, so I'm not going to use it again. But listening to you now, I really do believe that this was your calling.
Mm.
And most of the pieces that you've told us about today are justice oriented. And I feel like Salam and Hello has been the platform for you to shine and really truly tell stories about joy and justice, something that you're so passionate about. And I want to now talk about more about what happens behind the scenes in the live shows.
Yeah.
Because like you said, I've been to some of them and some of them are hectic. And not only the live shows, even just the episodes, right? We know how it can go from 100 to zero to 100 real
Both
quick.
Ways, yeah.
And you so effortlessly put on show mode.
Yeah.
Like it's the easiest thing that you've ever done in your life. We can be at a war behind the scenes, but as soon as a guest walks up, you're just like,
hello.
Hi, how are you? Oh, welcome. Da, da, da. So how do you do that? Like, what techniques do you use? You have to spill the beans. No gatekeeping today. We are not gatekeeping today.
I don't know. There's definitely no gatekeeping, but let me tell you. We're worried, extra group of people trying to move along the line. Maybe one day we'll get on to something. Until then we say, hold on. I know it's hard, but baby, you just got to hold on. I know it's hard, but baby, you just got to hold on.